Good morning. As Norton said, I'm Emily Schultz. I'm the director of the Family Ministries here at New Denver, and I'm super excited to be here with you guys today. So, since it is Thanksgiving week, I thought I should probably start this out by some like cute or funny story of kids being thankful. I feel like that's always been the case when I've gone to hear a sermon right before Thanksgiving. It's always like, here's a video of kids who are so adorable. So as I was thinking about this, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to put myself on blast and read you some thank you notes that I have from when I was a child. So these are specifically to my grandma, and they're a little bit embarrassing, so bear with me. I was about 10 or 11 at the time when I wrote these. My grandma was always really good about giving gifts to myself and my siblings. So every birthday, every Christmas, we could always expect a gift from grandma. But my mom had this idea that the only proper thing to do after you receive a gift is write a thank you note. And I agree with this idea, but this is what we got. So here's the first thank you note. It has lots of shiny stickers. It's maybe excessive. Okay, ready? Dear Grandma, thank you so much for the battery-operated toothbrush. It gives my mouth a massage when I brush. There's also a grip for my fingers on it. I love it. Ready for this? My old toothbrush was too small to efficiently clean my mouth, so yours is perfect. Also, thanks for the Little House on the Prairie movie. I watched that show every morning 2 summers ago and thoroughly enjoyed it. Well, not every morning, but close to it. Thanks again. I love you. XOXO. Love, Emily Gansfried. As if she did not know my last name. Okay, next one. This one's Christmassy. It says Joy. I remember we always had to go under the cabinet and pull through whatever thank you notes my mom had at the time. And really, Mom, like, not the best. Okay. This one's a little long. Dear Grandma Lee, thank you so much for my leather jacket. I wear it every Sunday to church, sometimes to school, often on weekends, and almost always when we go out on errands or shopping trips. We watched the Stable Boys Christmas movie you sent us right away on Christmas. Mom recognized a few actors, and we liked the story it told. The bag of goodies you gave me was much appreciated. That's still true if people give me goodies. Erasers came in the bag, and that was good because I have an eraser collection. Also, I named my beanbag animal Spaghetti. I don't know why that name popped into my mind. Anyways, I can't wait until you come in the spring. I'm going to take a tennis class in February. I love you, love Emily. P.S. Happy New Year 2002! With, like, eyeballs and everything. It's a good one. Okay, and then here, this one's my favorite. It's a little bit close to my heart because it's Lisa Frank. So there's, like, cheerleading bears on it, which is pretty cool. Ready? Dear Grandma Lee, thank you for helping pay for my contact lenses. I love them, and I see great through them. They are easy to put on and off. I'll see you soon. I love you. Love, Emily. And then this is my favorite part. P.S. My birthday sleepover party went well. I had fun. 3 people came. I invited 4. 3 of us, Christina, Erica, and I, went to sleep at 12 o'clock a.m. Megan went to sleep earlier. Mommy woke us up at 8:30 a.m. This is the embarrassing part. Okay. We had a wonderful homemade breakfast. Waffles. I put raisins, walnuts, banana slices, whipped cream, marshmallows, and chocolate chips on mine. As if my grandma needed to know every single thing that I put on my waffle. So that's, I mean, it's a little embarrassing, it's a little vulnerable, but I have a confession. My confession is that I don't really like writing thank you notes, even though it seems like I'm an expert at it. I don't really like writing them. And to be honest, I just remember sitting at my kitchen table and having this blank note in front of me and just thinking, how am I ever going to fill all of this space? And so that's why I think I got so detailed was I had this pressure of the thank you note is blank. I've got to fill it. It's either like stickers and words or just words on the whole thing. And I bet that some of you probably had that experience, right? Did your moms ever make you sit down and write thank you notes? Yeah, I wasn't that good at it. And to be honest, I don't really think I've changed all that much. So I got married in June, and all these people came to our wedding, and they gave us gifts, and some people couldn't make it because they live far away, so they sent cards, and I still have a stack of blank thank you notes in my apartment needing to be written. Phil and I have written maybe like a third of the notes that we need to send out, but this is like 6 months later. So I still, and at first I had all these excuses, right? So I wanted to put a wedding picture on the thank you note, so I had to wait until I got the wedding pictures back. And then once I had the pictures, I had to go online and create the whole template so that it looked right. And then I had to order it and wait for it to come in the mail. So even getting the thank you notes themselves was a process. And so I felt obviously justified through that part of, I can't write my thank you notes yet. I don't have them. But now I have them. And summer just kind of passed us by. We started school. We got really busy. And so that stack of thank you notes is still sitting there. And it kind of drives me crazy because it's constantly in the back of my mind of, I need to write these thank you notes. I need to write these thank you notes. But there's something blocking me and I'm not doing it. So I want to make a distinction here, because I think a lot of us feel thankful a lot of the time, but it takes that extra step to express thankfulness. And so I know for me and for my husband, Phil, we feel so thankful that all those people came to our wedding and that we know we have the love and the support of this network of people. We have this community around us. We feel so thankful. Some of you were at our wedding and you gave us gifts. And I'm so sorry that you have not received a thank you note, because we feel really thankful. But there's a disconnect here where we can feel really thankful, but we often don't take that next intentional step to say, I'm actually going to express my thankfulness. And I kind of wonder, does thankfulness even count if we're not expressing it? We can feel it, but if the person who gave me a gift doesn't know I'm thankful, does the feeling of thankfulness inside of me really do anything? I think that we, just as people, have a hard time expressing thankfulness. I don't think this is unique to me or to my husband. One more note. So I think if I write my thank you notes now for my wedding, which I probably will, I'm just going to write P.S. Merry Christmas, and that'll be your Christmas card. So we're not going to do thankful notes and Christmas cards this year. Anyway, I think as people, we have this struggle where we feel thankful, but we can't always express it. And I think sometimes we just maybe get busy and forget, or we assume the other person already knows that we're thankful. Maybe some of us actually feel entitled, and so we don't even have that feeling of thankfulness. We just think, I earned this, I deserve this, I don't have to say thank you for this. And I think sometimes we just feel like we have pressing things to do, and that I know that's been the boat I've been sitting in these last 6 months, is in the back of my head saying, I'll get to it, when I have time, I'll do it. So we're really good at coming up with all these excuses for why we're not expressing our thankfulness. And I think that this isn't even a unique problem to us in our current age. I think we as Christians know we're supposed to be thankful. We can read in the Bible these calls to be thankful. We can even look at Israel and how God was constantly doing cool stuff for them. And they would maybe say thank you, but really just immediately forget that God did anything cool and just turn and go back to their own old ways. And so this is just a human experience and a human problem where we aren't naturally thankful people. We're actually naturally forgetful people. And we often don't take that intentional extra step of thankfulness. This is an area where I actually want to brag a little bit on our country, because we can really get on them, on America, for everything that America does and the values that America holds, which are opposing Christian beliefs or Christian values. Even something like independence, like, sounds great on the surface, but then if you read the Bible, you're like, I don't know if that's really like our highest value. But in America, we have this day set aside for thankfulness. Thanksgiving, we have that this week. And I think that that's really cool. And one area where I can say, okay, like, yeah, America, good job. Let's celebrate thankfulness. I can get on board with that. And so this leads me to the question, if we expressed our thankfulness, if that was a rhythm in our life of expressing whenever we feel thankful, that we're actually expressing it to either someone else or to God, what would that look like, or how would that actually change our lives? So we're going to look at Luke 17, where Jesus does something really cool, and almost no one is thankful for it. If you have your Bible, you can turn there. If you don't have your Bible, there's some that are underneath some of the seats, and it's page 731. So we're going to start in verse 11. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When he saw them, he said, "Go, show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. We're going to just pause right there. So only one guy expresses his thankfulness. But before we get to that, let me talk about a few other things in the passage first. So verse 11, it shows us a little bit about where the story is taking place. And if you know the basic structure of Luke, you know that at this point, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. So he's headed towards the cross. He knows he's about to be crucified. And yet here he decides to stop. So he stops on that border of Samaria and Galilee. And verse 12 shows us that he encounters some lepers. And they're standing at a distance. So Jesus could have easily avoided him or avoided the group and just gone his own way. But he doesn't. So the lepers are standing at a distance. We know that because it tells us, and it also tells us they're crying out in a loud voice, so they must be pretty far away. And the reason that the lepers kept their distance was because they were considered physically and socially unclean and separate from society. So this leprosy, the skin disease that they had, was highly contagious, and nobody wanted to be around that or they would get it themselves. So lepers were kind of put off in their own little area to just live with each other, and they were separated from the rest of the people, the rest of society. So physically, they were obviously unclean or diseased, but then socially, they were cut off because of their disease. So these were really broken people, shunned by society. And Jesus takes the time to stop. And you know, leprosy, we don't think about it much, but it's actually not just an ancient concept. So my friend in college, her family went on a vacation to Hawaii. And instead of going to any of the resort islands, they went to the island of Molokai. And one day when they were there, they visited a leper colony that's still existing, still having real-life lepers living there. And there she heard this story about a guy named Father Damien. So Father Damien was born in Belgium in 1840, and he traveled to Hawaii as a Catholic missionary in 1863. When he arrived, he learned that the Hawaiian government had deported all of his lepers to the island of Molokai and that they were living in terrible conditions. And so he moved there, and he took over the leper colony, and he served as a pastor and as a doctor. He improved water conditions and food supplies and housing, and he founded two orphanages. He only received help from other priests for six of the 16 years that he was on Molokai. And in 1884, he contracted leprosy himself. And he decided that instead of leaving to receive cure, he would stay. So in 1889, he died of leprosy. We don't hear much about lepers today. But in Jesus' day, they were considered just the bottom of the barrel people, the physically and socially outcast, the worst that you could get. And verse 14 tells us that Jesus doesn't just not avoid the lepers, but he actually goes to them and he heals them. He tells them to go show themselves to the priests and that they would be healed. And showing yourself to the priest was a common thing to do after you had received healing. If you had become clean, you would go and show yourself to the priest and he would kind of put the stamp on it and say, "Yep, you're clean. You can, you know, if you're a leper, you can re-enter society." But these men, he says, while they're still unclean, go to the priest, show yourself to the priest, and you'll be healed. And so in faith they went, and on the way, they were healed. This was a miracle. This was really cool. And verse 15 tells us that one of them actually comes back and thanks Jesus, and we'll get to that. But the bombshell is in verse 16, when it says that the one who came back was a Samaritan. Now, we knew that Jesus was on the border of Samaria and Galilee, but here we find out that a Samaritan's actually involved in the story. And see, Samaritans were despised by Jews. They were considered half-breeds or spiritually unclean. And so the crazy thing is this guy was physically, socially, and spiritually unclean. that was literally as bad as it could get. And Jesus knew that, and Jesus was being very intentional here. And we have good reason to think that the other nine men were probably Jews. It would have been odd for Jesus to tell this whole group of people who weren't Jews to go show themselves to the priest. But if they were Jews, that would be normal, that they would show themselves to the priest. And then also we'll read a little bit later that Jesus calls the one who comes back a foreigner. So he's creating a distinction between the one and the other nine. So this one man was a Samaritan in this group of Jewish lepers. And had any Jewish rabbi stopped and tried to heal these men, he probably only would have healed the nine or tried to heal the nine. He probably would have left this one, the Samaritan, alone saying, you're not of my people. But Jesus doesn't do that. The other cool thing is that this man who had been standing at a distance and crying out in a loud voice, in verse 16 we see that Jesus has brought him close. He's even throwing himself down at Jesus' feet. He's become that near that he's touching Jesus. From being someone who was so physically and socially separate and outcast, he is now clean and healed and can come close. And this whole story, it makes a lot of sense because Luke is the author and he is a Gentile, not a Jew. He's the only writer of the Gospels who's kind of an outsider, a Gentile himself. And so he has a particular emphasis in his gospel on women and the poor and the oppressed, just anyone who at that time would be considered an outsider. If you read through Luke, you'll see one of these people on almost every page. He's constantly got his eye out for the outsiders. For him, this story is all about the outsider and Jesus' interaction with him. And I think Luke knows that those most sensitive to the gospel are often those who are on the outside. So what this passage is showing us is that God's heart is for the outsiders. And this is classic Jesus. This is so typical of Jesus. He was constantly associating himself with the sinners or the outcasts or those society had discarded. He always had compassion for these kinds of people. We saw this in Jonah as well. We just finished a series on Jonah, and in that we saw how God's heart was for the outsiders who were in Nineveh. And so this leads me to the question, who are the outsiders in our lives? The ones who are forgotten or isolated or unloved in our own culture or society, or even in our own church? Who are these people that others keep at a distance, keep at arm's length? Or who you yourself keep at a distance and keep at arm's length? It's probably not a Samaritan leper. I bet none of us know one of those. But it might be someone who looks different than you, or is in a different tax bracket than you, or someone who votes really differently from you. Maybe it's someone who's just awkward to talk to and you just never know quite what to say, or someone who's so negative and draining to be around, or maybe it's someone who's wronged you so that you feel justified in keeping your distance. I think we all have people who we naturally connect with, and we have others who we stay away from, even if it's just within our minds. Father Damien is a great example of someone who spent his life loving people that others had thrown away. But that's not the only way to love outsiders. And here's the deal. It doesn't even have to be really big. It can actually be really simple. So here's what I grew up seeing. For Thanksgiving, we would have Thanksgiving as a family, but my parents were really good about inviting outsiders to that meal. We had one neighbor in particular who was single, never married, had no kids, lived alone. She was in the house right behind us, so as kids we got to know her because we would always be losing balls across the fence, and she finally said, just come through the back and get them whenever you need to. And I would watch her cats when she would go away, and I hate cats, but I would do it. And she became a good friend, and so we would invite her to Thanksgiving. And even after my parents moved to a different neighborhood, she would still come, and sometimes she would bring her mom while her mom was still alive. And you know what's really cool is that my parents moved from Washington to Arizona this past March, and that neighbor is still coming to Thanksgiving this year. See, the truth is, outsiders are not just outsiders. They are people. And they can become really close friends and even family. So as I read this passage, I can't help but think, how would Jesus spend his Thanksgiving? Who would he invite to his Thanksgiving table? Would it be just his immediate family or people who were just like him? I just feel like he would have outsiders at this meal, people who had nowhere else to go. That's who would be at Jesus' Thanksgiving table. And how simple is that? For us, we already know we're going to have this meal. What would it look like to invite in someone who's not part of the inner circle? But the story is not just about outsiders. It's also about thankfulness. So let's keep reading verses 17 through 19. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." So here Jesus is asking the question that we're asking today. Why only one? Why did only one guy express his thankfulness and the others didn't? We've already said that it's hard to express thankfulness, and even if we feel thankful, we're good at coming up with excuses to not express it. But you know, I bet these lepers had some pretty good excuses too. They had just been healed of this extremely contagious disease. They were able to finally return home and see their families. They weren't considered unclean anymore. They could re-enter society. I bet some of them were dancing and jumping and running back to their homes as fast as they could. And part of me wants to justify them and say, if we're honest, wouldn't we do the same thing? Wouldn't we be more like the 9 than the 1? The response of the 9 who didn't return shows that we often take God's grace for granted. It's like we have better, more pressing things to do. But the story goes on. In verse 18, Jesus says, "Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?" And Jesus is acknowledging something really profound here. Because according to Jesus, saying thank you isn't just saying thank you. And more than that, it's saying that God sees thankfulness as trust. So thankfulness isn't just words. It's not a nice compliment or sentiment or an emotion or a feeling. It's a way to express praise to God, and God sees that as trust. I don't know if you catch this, but in verse 19, Jesus tells this man that his faith has made him well. And this word faith can mean faith or belief or trust. It's all packaged in this one word. So this man comes back to thank Jesus, and Jesus interprets that as trust, saying that he's giving praise to God and that his faith or his trust is what has made him well. So God accepts thankfulness when it is expressed as trust. And you know, I bet the other 9 felt extremely thankful. If you were healed of this contagious disease, you would feel very thankful. But Jesus didn't acknowledge the other 9 as having faith or trust in God. It was just this one. So there's a difference here between the 9. Well, all 10 went in faith to the priest and received healing. But when the one comes back and expresses thankfulness, something happens. And Jesus sees that. God sees that thankfulness as an expression of trust in him. And I think we actually get this at a human level. So my husband, Phil, he is the baker in our family. I'm half Italian and love to cook, but more often than not, he's the one who's making the desserts all the time. And I know that I've had my D group women over to my house, or I've gone to a Women's Connect event here, and usually if I'm bringing some sort of cookie or something and people ask me, "Oh, did you make this?" It's no, like, "This was Phil." Like, "Phil made you cookies again." And it's great. So yesterday, we went to this Friendsgiving, this pre-Thanksgiving, and Phil decided when we were signing up for what to bring that he was going to make a pecan pie. And he had never made one before, but he called his mom, and he was so excited, and he got the recipe and bought all the ingredients and came home, and yesterday morning he made this pie. And when we were at this Thanksgiving and I got served this warm slice of pecan pie and said, "Thank you," I think my thankfulness was actually expressing trust. Because if you think about it, when I say thank you to Phil for making this pie, I'm expressing trust that he did not poison the pie or that he did not miss an important ingredient in the pie. or that he did not drop the pie on the floor or stick shells in it so that I would choke. I am expressing trust that he made this pie with my best intentions in mind, and he gave it to me as a good gift, and that he was not trying to harm me. And so it's the same with God. When we thank God, we acknowledge that he is good and that we can trust him and that he is not trying to harm us, but he actually knows what's best for us and gives us what we need. And sometimes this is easy to do. In some situations, we pray, we ask God for something, maybe for healing or for guidance or provision, and when we see him provide right away, it's easy to thank God and to express that trust in God. Of course you gave me something good and didn't poison the pie, God. I got exactly what I wanted, right? But sometimes it's not so easy. So in this passage, we've seen that God's heart is for the outsider, that God sees thankfulness as trust. But there's one more key to understanding this passage, which is that God heals through thankfulness and trust. So in this passage, the Samaritan leper had already received physical and social healing when he was cured of his disease by Jesus. But here Jesus says something else. If we look back at verse 19, he says, "Rise and go. Your faith," or your trust, "has made you well." And so Jesus switches words here. This word for "made you well" is different than the cleansed or the healed that we got earlier in the passage. This word "made you well," it can mean a lot of things. It can mean physical healing. It can mean salvation. It can mean restoration. It can mean like a holistic well-being. And it usually has spiritual connotations. And so some of us need physical healing. Clearly, the lepers did. But we all need spiritual healing. We need peace and rest in God, a reconciled relationship with God. And so here, this word, it probably means a more holistic well-being. And this is what the other nine missed out on. They got the physical healing, but when the one came back and expressed thankfulness that Jesus saw as trust, this man received a deeper healing through that. He was made holistically well, spiritually well, connected to God. And this probably doesn't mean, you know, your faith has made you well as in salvation, or you got a ticket into heaven. This word is sometimes used as that salvation meaning. But here it's this holistic healing. He's receiving peace and rest in that relationship with God. He had received physical healing already, and through that process, he realized that God had worked in his life. So when he came back and said, "Thank you," that expression of faith and trust brought about spiritual healing. God heals through thankfulness and trust. You see, it's easy to be thankful in good times, right? We all know that. But it's in these hard times, especially when we don't see the immediate healing or provision or guidance that we desire. Even in those times, our thankfulness expresses trust in God, and God uses that thankfulness and trust to bring about a deeper healing, even while being in the process of not yet being healed. When we acknowledge God and thank him for who he is, even in hard times, we're expressing trust that he's sovereign, he's bigger than our problems. We're saying he's worthy of all of our thanks and all of our trust. And God, in turn, uses that thankfulness and that trust to produce a greater peace and rest in us in the midst of the difficulty. My grandma passed away this past September. But she wrote this letter to my brother about a year and a half ago. "Dear Philip, I'm leaving Woodland Retirement and moving into the Furs Retirement. Your mom told me I should clean up some of my belongings. I kept every letter I ever received from my beloved grandchildren, because when I was feeling depressed, I would read them, and the love that came out of them touched my heart and made me feel so much better. I truly love each one of my grandchildren. You are like my son, Philip, and you, Emily, Melissa, and Hannah, are like my very own daughters. I always ask God to bless each one of you every night when I go to bed. From my heart, Grandma Lee." You see, the only reason I have these thank you notes that I wrote to my grandma is because she kept them. She kept every one of them. And I think this shows us something. This shows us that thankfulness matters. It matters to other people, and it certainly matters to God. When we take time to express that thankfulness, God hears you and he heals you. He sees our thankfulness as trust, and he uses our thankfulness and our trust to heal us. So what would it look like for you to begin to express that thankfulness that you're probably already feeling? What if you expressed thankfulness in your marriage? What if you regularly, verbally affirmed your spouse? Maybe they make you coffee in the morning, or they do the dishes, or they make the bed. It could be something that's not over the top or dramatic. It might be just a daily rhythm of your lives that they're already doing that you've kind of started to take for granted of that's the way it is. But what if you stopped and you actually said, thank you, I appreciate when you do that for me? Or what about your coworkers or people that you supervise at work? What would it look like if you went out of your way to stop by their desk or to write them a note and to just say, hey, I see that you're doing a really good job and I just want to thank you? Or what if you express thankfulness to your kids? Maybe you've become tired of telling them the same things over and over, and if they would just pick up their socks off the floor, you would get a lot more sleep at night and you would have a lot more hair, right? But what if instead of focusing on the negative and the ways that they're driving you crazy, what if you stopped and said, hey, I really appreciate this about you. And you spent time expressing thankfulness to your kids. Whoever it is that you need to thank, I think it would go a long way if we began expressing the things that we're already feeling in regards to thankfulness. And as we do this, let's not forget that God is in this equation as well. He is the ultimate giver of everything good in our lives. And so we can be thankful for other people, but all of our thankfulness ultimately is directed towards God, because he is ultimately the one who gives us everything good that we have. So here's what I want you to do this week. There's two things. First of all, if God's heart is for the outsiders, that should be our heart as well. And so if you are hosting Thanksgiving at your house, invite in someone who doesn't have anywhere else to go or who just isn't like you in some way. If you're not hosting Thanksgiving or you're traveling, do this next week. Invite someone into your home to share a meal with you who wouldn't normally belong there. And then secondly, everyone got a bulletin today when they came in. So Brian and Chuck are going to come back up and start playing a song. And as they do, I want you to think back on the last year of your life. Think about one way that you've seen God bring healing or wholeness or guidance or provision, some sort of restoration to a broken part of you. How has God worked in your life in the last year? Just think of one way. It doesn't have to be dramatic, and maybe you haven't seen the full healing yet. Maybe you're still in process, and that's okay. But I want you to write down that situation and thank God for the healing that he has brought. I think it's really easy to be like the other nine who don't actually pause to express their thankfulness. And so I'd love if we could just take a minute or two right now before we start singing and write down one situation where you've seen God at least start bringing some healing or bringing some provision or bringing some direction, and then just thank him for the way that he's working in your life.